This is A Cult of Personality, Podcast 67, published on August 7th, 2009. I'm honored to say that this episode, featuring an interview with Frater W.I.T., is sponsored by generous listeners, specifically David Beth, our guest in Podcast Episode 55. Check out that interview if you haven't already, and the Podcast 55 show notes have all the links to find David Beth online. Freya Aswin also contributed. Please see the Freya Aswin website at www.aswin.co.uk. That's ASWYNN.co.uk. Sponsors also include Father Anthony, Patricia, and Brad. I want to thank you all again for your donations to the show. I greatly appreciate your support. If you enjoy listening to these recordings, if you want them regularly, and if you find them useful, then please sponsor an episode by clicking on the donate button in the upper right corner of the Occult of Personality website. Thanks again for all the listeners who wrote me such supportive emails recently. I'm privileged to be able to continue bringing you these recordings and grateful to you for listening. If you want to contact me, my email address is rochester92@yahoo.com, or you can click the contact link on the left sidebar of the Occult of Personality website. So, my apologies for all the insanity with the website recently. Occult of Personality was unavailable for a significant portion of the past month because of issues with the web server, the hosting company, database problems, and then finally software update conflicts. It was a perfect storm in a technological sense, taking down the site more than once. But because of generous listener donations, I was able to rebuild the website at this new domain, occultofpersonality.net. So the website address has changed to occultofpersonality.net. The old .com address is being redirected here. occultofpersonality.net features new, updated, and supported podcast software, fewer older archived podcasts, and a simplified link structure. Also, the podcast RSS feed address has been changed to www.occultofpersonality.net/feed. If you want to subscribe using iTunes, please manually add the podcast feed in your iTunes. You can find it in the upper left corner of the website, or you can click the feed burner link on the right-hand sidebar of the occultofpersonality.net website and go to the feed burner page for Occult of Personality and subscribe that way. Our intro music is by Hypnosis. The background music you're hearing now is by the band Darkfold, and the song is appropriately titled Nomads. The outro music is a song called Evocation by the band Agrippa 93. You can check out their website at agrippa93.com. Now, in podcast episode 67, we're joined again by Frater W.I.T., who's appeared previously in episode 10 speaking about his book Enochian Initiation, and in episode 20 talking about the 8th Circuit Model of Consciousness, both of which were excellent. This time, Frater W.I.T. joins us for a very thought-provoking conversation to discuss his book, Advanced Enochian Magic. Returning to the program this evening, we have Frater W.I.T., who previously appeared in episodes 10 and 20. Frater W.I.T., I want to thank you very much for joining us this evening.
It's my pleasure, Greg.
Tonight we are going to discuss your latest book called Advanced Enochian Magic. Before we begin, I just want to thank you again for sending me a copy of the book, and I want to make it known that I enjoyed it tremendously and find it to be a very worthwhile book. It's very readable. It contains a lot of excellent information and insights, as well as practical exercises and descriptions of various degrees or states of attainment that I found extremely useful. But I'm sure we'll get into all of that in much more detail. I will also add links so people can purchase your book through Amazon. And as we begin, I just want to read from the introduction to your book. Magic is the key to self-empowerment. Its practice opens up doors to a higher state of being, surpassing all human norms. Mages of all times and climes have transcended the human condition by reaching to the heavens or dipping down into the black pits of the underworld. The ardent student of the occult can ascend with the angels to God Most High, or command the cohorts of demons to bring wealth, power, and other satisfactions. In all cases, the endeavor is to develop powers that raise one above one's peers to achieve excellence in a world full of mediocrity and limitations. The new age in which humanity finds itself offers fantastic new opportunities for the ambitious wizard to grow and become something far greater than anything yet imagined. What is to come will utterly dwarf everything that has gone before, and those positioned to embrace the new mind will be on the vanguard of the evolution of intelligence on this planet. Occult study and practice offers a way to achieve this advanced state of development. That was a most interesting and ambitious way to start your latest book. And it leads me to ask, before we talk specifically about Enochian, what is it that causes you to hold this opinion, which I would consider quite optimistic, that the potential of human consciousness will be perhaps realized in the coming years?
The message of Thelema is that humanity has entered into a new age, a new eon, where all new answers to age-old questions will be discovered. The previous norms and patterns of human culture will be left behind, essentially. What humanity will realize, of course, if we don't destroy ourselves, and that's certainly a big if, but given the advancement of human consciousness, given enough time, I believe that a lot that is currently threatening humanity in the way of ignorance of our true nature and of the nature of life in general, this new realization will lead people to solve many of the problems that we all currently face. A new attitude toward nature, religion, culture, and really human existence in general will transform our planet.
Oftentimes, Kabbalists will talk about the Gavoric current, which prompts those who are seeking to reach greater heights by forcing them to overcome whether difficulties or obstacles or what have you. Do you believe that may be the impetus that may spur us to these greater heights?
Well, I think in the past what the Gavoric current has brought is essentially war between cultures. A lot of cultural fusion has taken place as one culture conquers and assimilates another. Certainly the conquests of Christianity and Islam have brought together a great many people of different countries and cultures to realize a greater state of mind. Of course, in our new age, so much has changed that what before was a path of advancement is now a path of obstacles. And certainly these are obstacles to the new current, the new age that is being experienced, at least in Western culture. I don't think there's anything like it in Middle Eastern or Eastern cultures. But I think that what I'm saying is that the Gavoric current will have a different expression in the new eon as human intelligence grows to the point where overt violence is no longer necessary to bring cultures together in a relationship of master and slave. As that necessity wanes, what will come is a drive in understanding within the collective consciousness of humanity that increase in consciousness can come through means other than war and aggressiveness, like it's been in the past. A more direct spiritual growth will be enjoyed. Crowley wrote about this to an extent in Magic and Theory and Practice and other of his writings, where he understands the formula of spiritual attainment in the new eon involves a direct growth like the growth of a child rather than the eon of Osiris, where a period of trial and death and resurrection needs to take place. So I think Rahur Kuwait as the crowned and conquering child is the epitome of expression of the Gavoric current in the new eon.
We've talked before about your Enochian initiation, the power and majesty of Enochian magic, and you are continuing its publicization and perhaps even evangelism with your new book. And I'm curious, because I see so many books about Enochian magic, and I'm not trying to compare or contrast yours to theirs, because they're all unique, and clearly your book takes a very unique approach and tack in explaining and talking about it. In your opinion, is there any specific reason or impetus behind the vast floodgates of Enochian material that seem to be coming out in the past several years?
Well, as you said, every author has their own take on Enochian magic. The really amazing thing about Enochian magic is that it's so effective. It's effective in opening doors within the mind. It takes the mind of the operator to quite a different place. It's certainly a different place than what the usual hermetic Kabbalistic magic, such as Golden Dawn magic, will take you. I've used Enochian magic for well over 10 years, and I have realized a depth and intimacy of knowledge of natural cosmic forces. As I've said before, I believe Thelema is a direct expression of the futuristic ideal of Enochian magic and the all-encompassing nature of its higher reality. It just brings the operator of Enochian magic to so higher a state of being as to have a view of all time and all space. And ultimately that leads to a transcendence of the time and space of the material universe. All new pathways of evolution are possible. Enochian magic, I think, is vastly superior to all other forms of magic because of this, because it operates on such a level beyond what humans have understood as what the natural world is, what it means to be human, and how human beings operate within the natural world. All of that is transcended with Enochian magic. And I think people, the more people practice Enochian magic, the more books will be written about it, because it's such an amazing magical adventure. I think many practitioners of Enochian magic will be inspired to write books based on their own understanding.
Now, a question arises. There exists a perception, perhaps even a misperception, amongst certain communities of magical practitioners about Enochian magic in particular, in that they've expressed the idea that in some way Enochian is harmful to the practitioner. If you wouldn't mind just talking a little bit about that.
Enochian magic has been given a bad reputation by a lot of the early 20th century Golden Dawn practitioners of magic. Many of them saw their fellows getting sick with respiratory diseases, and they were practicing Enochian magic. Certain notable commentators, such as Paul Foster Case, came to the erroneous conclusion that Enochian magic was causing their respiratory problems. Well, that is not the case at all. What happened at the time is that people practicing magic and yoga in England, and especially London, were practicing pranayama, which is a series of deep breathing exercise. Well, when you do pranayama in one of the most polluted cities in the world, you're probably going to get respiratory illnesses. Yoga was developed in India at a time where people would go into the mountains and the forests and live in the ashrams to practice yoga. And the air was perfectly clean in those areas. Mm-hmm. I rather doubt that many of the original practitioners of yoga ever dreamed that people living in dusky industrial cities would ever practice their disciplines. But there's even a deeper issue here than respiratory problems. And this applies just as well to Goetic magic as Enochian magic. You will hear a variety of magical commentators warn people against practicing evocation, whether it's Goetic magic for demonic evocation or Enochian magic for angelic evocation. Various excuses are given. But what Goetic and Enochian magic do for people is that empowers them. It brings their magical disciplines under their own control. And once you have that, you don't need the teachers. I've mentioned before on other podcasts how I believe that a variety of magical and spiritual teachers will actually empower their students to make their students dependent on them as teachers, so that a lot of these gurus who become centers of cults of personalities will enjoy the support and devotion of lots of students. Mm-hmm. And these students' practices work to enlighten them to a degree, but by the same token, they serve to make the student more dependent on the teacher. With Enochian magic and Goetic magic and the like, people don't need teachers. They're able to develop the initiation on their own, to develop their own personal contacts with transpersonal states of consciousness, and they'll be able to really be their own teacher, their own adept, their own master. I think that a lot of that action was discouraged, especially in Victorian English times, mm-hmm. where domination by certain spiritual leaders over their flock or what following, whatever you want to call it, was the norm. So that you had a lot of teachers that worked to make their students dependent on them. My desire, and I've said this before on other podcasts, is to live in a world full of people who are self-confident, self-motivated, and self-assured. I'm not comfortable with the culture of masters and servants, leaders and followers. I'd like to live in a world full of people who are their own leaders, and they get together when collective action is needed, but that's as far as it goes. I think humanity would be a lot better off, and there would be much better relationships between people when the sense of dependence and codependence disappears. I've seen this kind of thing in my own magical experience, and I can tell you that it's not pleasant when people try to discourage you from developing your independent magical skills. A lot of manipulation goes on. And like I said, you know, a cult of personality involves masters and servants, which is certainly antithetical to Thelema. You have to really be careful who you get involved with. It's always useful to have a teacher when you're just starting out, but ultimately a teacher is only valuable insofar as how much he or she can empower their students and eventually enable that student to go off on their own and be their own magician. If that doesn't happen, that's not the kind of teacher you want.
Right. People often point to the example of Dean Kelly or even Crowley to an extent and say, you know, well, look at what happened to these men after they did such and such. Their lives were either ruined, as they might describe it, or in shambles or whatever the case may be, and somehow attribute that to the magical practice. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think there are a great many detractors of occultism in general who will point to certain people, certain practitioners, and say, you know, this is what happened to them. Occultism is evil and wrong. You have to, when you hear things like that, you have to consider the source. As I've said in my book, I believe that occult practice is the way to tap into your own inherent power and to develop that far beyond the norm. Now, everyone has their own particular circumstance. I would say that John Dee had problems because of his magical endeavors long before he and Kelly worked together. The story goes that John Dee was producing a play, and in that play, he added a special effect where an actor was raised off the floor with wires. Well, people saw this and didn't see the wires, so they came to the hysterical conclusion that John Dee's magic enabled that person to rise off the ground and fly around the room. Ever since that time, Dee was condemned as a sorcerer. Even when he explained to people what had happened, they didn't want to know. The problem is when, you know, certain sects of Christianity and religions like it will encourage people to act irrationally and intolerantly toward other efforts in life. And so once people get it in their mind that someone is an evil sorcerer or whatnot, nothing you tell them will make them change their mind. Crowley wrote about exactly this phenomenon in his own case, where if someone is accused of a crime, many people will just jump to the conclusion that they're guilty simply because they were accused. you saw this run rampant in Salem, Massachusetts at the time of the Puritans. 19 innocent women were hanged as witches because of the hysteria. A lot of this master-servant type of religion, especially cults like Puritanism and the Plymouth Brethren that Crowley grew up with, these people are just looking for something to point a finger at. I think that, Crowley terms this type of thinking as medieval thinking, and it really is. It's not critical thinking. And it's because of this that anyone who is even accused by anyone of being an evil sorcerer or witch or whatever, they will suffer terribly in their lifetimes, no matter what they do, no matter what kind of magic they practice, or whether or not they practice magic, as in the case of the Salem witch trials. It's not because of the occult practice that these people suffered. It's because of the ignorance and gullibility and medieval thinking of so many people in the world, as well as the fact that, for instance, Crowley was terrible at managing money. He was the first to say that. And unfortunately, he trusted the wrong people with his money. He lost it all and eventually died a pauper. He was constantly asking his students for money. And he wrote in various of his writings that he couldn't understand why he would be given such an important task to perform by the secret chiefs and yet not have the money to properly pull it off. So these people did suffer in their lives, but it wasn't because of their magical practice. It was either due to the primitive conditions in which they lived or incompetence in the way of financial matters. Or with Kelly, I mean, Kelly was a criminal, and he died like a criminal. He died trying to escape from a prison because he made these false claims about being an alchemist that he couldn't deliver on. There are many reasons why these people run into trouble. It's not the magical practice.
Yeah, thank you very much for addressing that. In your book, Advanced Enochian Magic, you go into great detail providing guidelines for students. In my opinion, the book is useful not only for someone interested in Enochian specifically, but for anybody interested in occultism or magic. You provide exercises and different practices that are useful for all levels of practitioners. Would you talk a little bit about your purpose in trying to cover such a broad range of experience, so the book is useful for someone who is a brand new, you know, to occultism, or someone who's been practicing for many years?
Sure. My great goal in writing my books is to encourage people to practice magic, if not Enochian magic per se, then some kind of magic. I wrote my first book because I wanted to show people what magic can do. There are very few books on the market about people's actual experiences in what they encounter practicing the various arts of occultism. I wanted to provide an example of what I had been through so that people would know you don't have to be Aleister Crowley or John Dee to practice magic and benefit from that practice. So I wanted to write books that were more advanced than the usual book on occultism that you'll find at your local bookstore. There are many books that give instruction and philosophies and things like that. But there's very little in the way of why would you practice it, how would you practice it, and what can you expect from it. I wanted to fill that gap and also provide some material that would cater to people who had been practicing magic for a while to understand that this is where magic can take you. I know that when I was first starting out in magic, I was fascinated with the whole literature that I found. This was back in the 80s, naturally. But after about 10 or 15 years, I came to realize that these books were not interesting me anymore. I had read about most of the information out there. And the new books that were coming out really didn't offer anything new. It was pretty much the same material, Hermetic philosophy, Kabbalah, various Golden Dawn teaching and things like that, over and over again. Now, I was interested in reading Chaos Magic when that came out because that was something significantly new. But once again, there are 1,000 books now on chaos magic. There's very little out there that's novel or very little that takes it further. So I wanted to fill a gap that I saw in the literature and write for some more advanced magicians so that they would have something interesting to read. And like I said before, I wanted to encourage people new to magic to stick with their training and their practices, because wonderful things happen when you do it for long enough. The more magic you practice, the more magic you can practice, and the more power you can channel, the greater experience you can have as long as you stick with it. So that's where my first book was coming from. As I was writing my second book, I wanted to give an update about what I had been doing. I had moved on from the Enochian Seniors and Kings of the Elemental Tablets. I wanted to give an update of my work on the various other systems involved in Enochian magic. And then I came to realize, well, there's all this material I'm writing on advanced magic and being your own adept, being your own guide to your own magical practice. Well, how do you get there? How do you get from beginning in magic and first starting to read books to the point where you can practice Enochian magic safely and with a fair chance of success at it? Now, I have stated before that I am coming out of two broad-based magical schools of initiation. One is a Rosicrucian-based system and the other is a Masonic based system. So I wanted to give someone a basic step-by-step set of instructions where they wouldn't have to join an order or some kind of magical organization to get this training, to get this information. I wanted to provide a vehicle for anyone who wanted to learn how to become proficient in magic without getting a teacher or, you know, going and join some magical order and giving so much of themselves to it just to get magical training. I have been through a number of different training systems, and I wanted to make a short, direct curriculum of self-based training to give people the tools that they needed to initiate themselves and get themselves going. In my first book, in one of the earlier chapters, I have an essay where I discuss the advantages and disadvantages of group initiation versus self-initiation. So in this book, I wanted to give some details for people who aren't joiners, who wouldn't go near a magical order, and really show them at least what one person did to reach a point where they could benefit greatly from advanced magic.
Yeah, that's extremely valuable, and I think it is very useful to have these type of tools available. Even if people are members or thinking of joining a group, I think it's still useful to be able to get this information independently of a group or a teacher. So I think anyone who takes a look at your book and reads it will appreciate that. My next question has to do with the relation of Enochian magic to other disciplines. I think anyone who's studied Enochian or practiced it can relate to the idea of studying, certain branches of mathematics or new physics. But if you wouldn't mind just talking a bit about why studying those other disciplines is beneficial, not just to an Enochian practitioner, but to any magician.
I believe that it's very important to put the old magic in a modern scientific framework. The magic from ancient times was really the applied science of that day. The scientific paradigm, as understood, was based on a spiritual hierarchy, whether you believed in the gods or God and the angels or demons and what have you, magic was developed as a practical way to deal with the forces as they were understood by the science and natural philosophy of that old time. Now, with the scientific enlightenment of the 18th and 19th centuries, a whole new scientific paradigm came into vogue, and magic was considered to be superstitious nonsense, and that there weren't little demons and angels flying around somewhere. None of this stuff was real, and it was all people's fantasy. It's only because of antiquarians like Elias Ashmole and Merrick Casaubon that so many of the ancient magic texts survived to the modern era, surviving the scientific enlightenment and the virtual suppression of the old ways of dealing with natural and supernatural forces. So magic in our day is quite a bit divorced from the culture in which it took root and developed. I think that by studying quantum physics, even if reading books meant for laymen rather than all the complex mathematics, the magical community can come to an understanding about what this magic really does and what it really is. In this way, the occult arts can be brought into a modern framework and given some kind of respect and credence. I think magic is very good at manipulating the collective archetypes that each of us has from a Jungian perspective. Also, physics is just coming now to appreciate the science of consciousness and what drives consciousness in the brain and nervous system, as well as some of the ancillary systems like the genetic system, the human genome, and the metagenome, things of that nature. I describe in my book how Timothy Leary's 8 neural circuit model can be adapted to the process of consciousness expansion and spiritual development using the disciplines of magic and mysticism. And I incorporate the ideas of the physics of consciousness in order to bring an understanding of what consciousness is, how magic can enhance consciousness, and what enhanced consciousness can do. I write in one of my chapters that consciousness is the power of magic. I've asserted for years that the gods, the angels, the spirits, and the demons are us. They are aspects of human consciousness on an individual and a collective level. And magic is the process of projecting that enhanced psychic energy into physical reality. Whether only you can see the manifestation in the room with you or whether other people would be able to see it as well, there really does seem to be a direct manifestation of a psychic operation in material terms. I think that can be the start of a fantastic science. I refer to it as a psychomechanical technology. It's a way to enhance consciousness to the point where some kind of material mechanism can receive that psychic input and translate that input into material terms. I think when you have artificial intelligences able to interface with human consciousness directly, whether it's by telepathy or by a holistic projection of the mind, nervous system, and DNA system, what have you, that will be the start of a technological revolution that will boggle the mind. So I think magic can be at the core of a fantastic scientific and technological revolution. I think something like that could really be the beginnings of a spacefaring technology. And it would be wonderful if people as individuals could develop their own psychic technology and from there parlay it into a psychomechanical technology. And then people would have technology that makes technology, and it would be a whole new era of human existence if and when this comes to pass. I think this is in line with the promise of the new eon and the new understanding of human existence in a broader cosmic context. So I believe that it is vital to bring magic back into a scientific realm and unite the concepts of theoretical and practical science with the psychic sciences of occultism.
That's well worth considering. And it brings up another point, which is invocation and evocation. You've explained your perspective on the way this functions, and if you wouldn't mind, I just want to quote a bit from your book, Advanced Enochian Magic. These spirits begin as psychic ideals and are then projected into physical reality from the mind and nervous system. The mind-brain-body system is brought to a state of extreme excitation by the act of ceremonial magic with all the ornate regalia and magical sigils, and then acts as a projector which converts psychic energy into a quasi-physical field of effect, including the spirit itself. This manifest magical field can be felt by the magician and others present, and everyone can receive mental impressions from the spirit therein. An interdimensional feedback circuit is thus created, which can expand consciousness to new realms of sensation. And then you go on to explain, with this outlook of magic in mind, the reader can understand the essential difference between angels and demons. Angels being projections of superconsciousness, and demons more of the magician's subconscious. Would you talk a little bit about how you came to these conclusions or observations?
As I've described before, I compare consciousness to an iceberg. Now, with an iceberg, 10% of it is visible above the water, and the other 90% is submerged below the water. That 90% I compare to the human subconscious, and the 10% above the water to the human self-conscious. Now, the iceberg floats in a sea of water, which is the same substance as the iceberg, only the iceberg is frozen seawater. So I compare the ocean of in which the iceberg floats as superconsciousness. It's the greater totality of consciousness in which each person's identity and sense of self exists. I first read about the concept of superconsciousness in the essays of Aldous Huxley, The Doors of Perception and Heaven and Hell. Those have been put together in one book. I highly recommend it. Aldous Huxley was a professional psychologist and a profound philosopher, just like Timothy Leary was. So, in my Enochian evocations, I have encountered sublime expressions of my own higher totality, my own superconsciousness, the self capital S, and I've received profound teachings from the angels, better than I had ever received in any order that I had been a part of. When you evoke superconsciousness into yourself, you're calling that higher level, that higher attainment into your being. Now you can conduct it outward and form what's called an atmosphere, that quasi-physical field, as I described in my book. And I've had direct experience working group magic where other people have their own experiences of this atmosphere, this magical field. In my first book, I describe group initiation where the candidate for initiation first begins the process by stepping into the room where the initiation is to take place and getting hit with that magical atmosphere developed in the opening of the ceremony. Anyone who's ever undertaken group initiation knows what I'm talking about. Once you step into that room, usually you're blindfolded at the time, you really step into a field of energy that affects your mind on all levels. It affects your nervous system. It affects every cell in your body. That is superconsciousness. That is a higher form of consciousness that's raising your own personal state to a higher degree of complexity and activity. Now, for goetic evocation, like demonic evocation, this is to take a part of yourself, a part of you that's submerged deep within yourself and that's usually hidden from you, and bringing it into your field of awareness. And ultimately that gets projected as an atmosphere of a much lower vibratory rate than an angelic or initiatory atmosphere. This is a way to plumb the depths of your subconsciousness. Now, I haven't practiced too much goetic evocation, but I have done various work to explore the depths of my subconscious. And what I've discovered from that, as well as witnessing goetic evocation performed by a group, is that the demons are your deep subconscious atavisms. The way I understand it, human consciousness has been developing for millions of years. You could trace the development of human consciousness specifically with the evolution of language. And there are a variety of books that teach that archaeological evidence has shown that the first spoken language was used perhaps 2.5 million years ago. So that's a great deal of time for language and human consciousness to develop. Now, the way evolution proceeds, you never have replacement, where a new form takes the place of the old function. The old functions are still there. They're just underlying the newer strata of functionality. So, with 2.5 million years of development, there are a great deal of different conscious functioning that has come and gone in human awareness. And everything is still there, it's just held deep within the subconscious. And the act of demonic evocation, such as goetic evocation, this action serves to reveal these hidden atavisms, these hidden ancient pre-modern levels of human consciousness. Now, one of Crowley's students, his name was Austin Osborne Spare. Some people pronounced it Spare. At any rate, Spare wrote a lot about what he called atavistic resurgence, where you plumb the depths of your unconscious and discover the pre-modern states of human and animal consciousness, and you perform meditations and magical activities to bring these out. His practice of sigil magic, which was brought into a modern context by Peter J. Carroll in his Chaos Magic, was meant to tie into those ancient hidden functions. I believe, and it has been my experience, that to plumb those depths through demonic evocation or whatever else, it context these atavisms, that submerged part of your iceberg, metaphorically speaking, and brings them to the surface. Now, what I've discovered so far is that when you do that, you develop new currents of living vital force in your body, and this can have a tremendous healing effect. I find it a very valuable practice. I'm planning in the future on writing an essay which I may publish in some local occult newsletter. I'm going to entitle the article, "Demons Aren't Evil Unless You Want Them to Be." I think that for most people, it's a horrific experience to encounter an atavism, something that, at least on a collective level, people have tried to suppress extremely. And I think that's a large reason why the very subject of occultism frightens so many people, because the function of occultism is to raise these unconscious contents to the surface. And most people have such a deep-seated instinctual fear and revulsion of that. Most occultists tend to be persecuted in one form or another. So in bringing up these atavisms, these simpler, older, lesser forms of consciousness, you bring your overall consciousness into that much greater a state of integration. And as I state in my book, Advanced Enochian Magic, psychic integration corresponds to Timothy Leary's fifth neural circuit. It's that first step beyond the terrestrial circuits that deal with the existence of life on Earth. It's the first real leap into the mystical realm. And a whole new level of functionality begins. And as I state, the more psychic integration you achieve, the more you bring your nervous system to bear in that gestalt. And when you have psychoneural fusion, that's Leary's sixth circuit. And it's the sixth circuit start to experience superconsciousness and the greater wholeness in which your personal being exists. And that leads further to the realization of genetic consciousness, which is racial memory and genetic memory, until you finally reach eighth circuit, where you begin to experience cosmic and quantum consciousness directly. The invocation of higher consciousness and the evocation of lower consciousness is the occult program to work this model of step-by-step higher consciousness. And as I've said, a great deal of potential is realized in this way.
Yeah.
This is the way you can reach beyond the norm.
Yeah, that's for sure. I appreciate you going into such depth as well. When you describe the process of integration by facing these atavisms, as you say, it reminds me a lot of the imagery employed in Tibetan Buddhism, where you have fiery demons wearing skulls and crushing things and blood and gore, and sort of using that as a meditative image to transcend or integrate, if you will. The last question I had is something you mentioned in the beginning of Advanced Enochian Magic, and I was wondering if you could please talk a little bit about how it is that the new aeon seems to be the realization, if you will, of the Enochian system that was first received so long ago.
Well, as I said, Enochian magic is incredibly futuristic. It brings about levels of consciousness that would otherwise take thousands of years for humans to develop in the normal way. I believe that such a leap in consciousness was made in the first years of the 20th century as to be an amazing leap forward for humanity. It was such an acceleration of consciousness. I think of it as the first realization of cosmic consciousness, not just consciousness of the stars and planets, but the understanding of the real nature of the universe, how our sun is part of a galaxy of billions of stars, which is in turn one of hundreds of billions of other galaxies. It's true cosmic consciousness. Nuit, the goddess Nuit, the goddess of infinite space and the infinite stars thereof, is a direct expression of cosmic consciousness, just as Hadith, the god of the infinitesimal, the ultimately small within the body of Nuit, is quantum consciousness, the consciousness of the subatomic and atomic world. The advances in quantum physics that first appeared in as early as 1900 clearly show that such a breakthrough in human consciousness began at that point, as to take the human race an immense leap forward. I believe that Enochian magic was a presentiment of this realization of cosmic consciousness. It was projected hundreds of years into the past, and John Dee was magician enough to become aware of that that echo of that incredibly significant future event, and he was able to form the Enochian system based on that futuristic content, that futuristic contact. So that Enochian magic is ideal for a Thelemic magician. Certainly Crowley believed it to be so. Anyone can read The Vision and the Voice and learn what Crowley did with the Enochian system of magic and how it led him directly to become what he calls Master of the Temple, which is a level of attainment that all his teachers taught him was impossible to attain. You had to be dead in order to reach that level of spiritual transcendence. Crowley reached beyond that and attained what was considered to be unattainable. And that is really the hallmark of the new eon, doing things and knowing things that before were considered impossible. So even to this day, Enochian magic is futuristic, and for the leap ahead of the new eon, it's just ideal that such futuristic magic, such a futuristic current of magic, was received by both Crowley and Dee.
That's fascinating. Before we wrap up, I was just wondering if you had any final thoughts for people listening, or if you wanted to talk about anything you're working on.
Well, I'm not working on a third book right now. As I said before, it's my hope that I will encourage people to practice magic in one form or other, not necessarily what I've laid out in my books, but just to show them that becoming an advanced magician is really a worthwhile effort, and the effort is greatly rewarded. I encourage people to act in a thoughtful, independent manner and not allow anyone to usurp their freedom. I encourage people to be their own best teachers, their own best guides. And ultimately, whatever you read, whatever you're taught, you know what's right for you. And it's important to follow that personal vision wherever it leads. And if you find that that is in conflict with teachings gained by a guru or books or whatever, you need to carefully consider if that teaching is useful to you or not. And if it's not useful, to hell with it, no matter what the source.
Frater W.I.T., thank you for joining us again. The book is Advanced Enochian Magic. You can find links to it in the show notes. And I would encourage people to pick it up and read it. And as you say, to practice, because you're correct. The rewards are certainly worth the effort. I want to thank you again for joining us, and I really, really appreciate your time and the work that you've put into this book.
Glad to do it.
Smoldering, leaving the conjuring.